The conversation continues with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back to the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk. In this hour, we'll be talking to Professor Angus Dalgliesh, who will be joining us to look at the latest findings regarding the mRNA vaccine. And we learn how AI is being weaponized by paedophiles. And a reminder of our question of the day. After the St. George's Day rally yesterday in central London that saw clashes with police, we want to concentrate on the more positive aspects of the country and ask, what makes you feel patriotic? Here's our phone number. Get in touch.
This is the way we're going to be heard.
From the US and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I don't know if you saw yesterday about Andrew Neil being in a Lords committee giving testimony. How I laughed. Andrew Neil is an establishment journalist, and he was being all big and beefy and telling a parliamentary committee that politicians need to keep far, far away from journalism. He was very aggressive with them. The Spectator's Fraser Nelson was bigging up his boss on X yesterday. He was, how should governments help journalists? Andrew Neil is asked by a Lords committee, and Andrew Neil had said, stay the hell out of it. You're not on our side. We're not on your side. We're different. Relations between journalists or media and government should always be bad and never on any account allowed to get better. Really? I can't stand that. What a hogwash. These people are friends with government. And I pointed that out to Fraser Nelson, that Andrew Neil is incapable of keeping a distance from his chums in Parliament because their Spectator magazine annual summer party is where they all get together and then afterwards pretend that they are on opposing sides. Let's show you some images of Andrew Neil schmoozing with his parliamentary chums. There is, of course, Andrew Neil with Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister. Then we have Andrew Neil with perhaps Boris Johnson. Oh, Andrew Neil with Nadeem Zahawi. You probably remember him. He was vaccine minister at one stage. And it was also Nadeem Zahawi who used taxpayer money to heat his horse stables. Then, of course, there is Andrew Neil, who's always and often with Boris Johnson, former prime minister. So this is interesting. Andrew Neil clearly is doing a really good job of staying the hell away from politicians, isn't he? Let us not forget also that Andrew Neil was the reprehensible individual who wrote an utterly obscene piece in the Daily Mail during C19, calling for people who refused the C19 jab to be isolated from the rest of society. In my opinion, and we're still allowed to have those, he's an establishment stooge called in to give parliamentary testimony. Don't believe a word of it. And let me look at another story that grabbed my interest. Kate Middleton, you haven't heard much about her recently, have you? She is, of course, the Princess of Wales. She's just received a unique honour from the King in recognition of her years of public service. And after being appointed to the Order of the Companions of Honour, they're just so wordy, these titles. And so basically, we're told that this is a special award because of Kate's contribution to the arts. And by that, of course, I don't mean her Photoshop skills. No, dear me, no. We are told she is a keen photographer, a patron of the Royal Photographic Society, no less, as well as inspiring the moving lockdown photography project Hold Still. Now, this wasn't an award that Charlie could give her himself. He had to put pressure on the Prime Minister's office to do so. The appointment is not in his gift. And it is actually the Order of the Companion of Honour, as I say. The spiritual home is the chapel room at Hampton Court Palace, just down the road from here. And she's in good company amongst all manner of establishment people who have also been bestowed that honour, including Sir David Attenborough, Dame Judi Dench, Sir Ian McKellen, Dame Maggie Smith, Sir Roy Strong, and Sir Paul McCartney. Interesting company one keeps, isn't it? Right, on that note, let us find out from Gemma about the second lot of UK news headlines.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here she is, Gemma Cooper. Anything exciting happened in the last hour, Gemma?
Yeah, there's a few news stories, but that whole editorial just reminded me of that great comedian. Do you want to call him a comedian? I think him and Bill Hicks, they weren't really comedians. You know, they were like prophets, satirists, you know, truth tellers. George Carlin, you know, and what your editorial has just proven is that that classic joke. It's a big club and we ain't in it. We ain't in it. They are giving awards to each other, hanging out with each other, you know, and then claiming the opposite, you know. Oh, no, no, journalism and politicians, we're not bedfellows. You totally are bedfellows. And also opposition parties are bedfellows. They pretend they're not in the public sphere, left and right, blue and red, you know, but behind closed doors, they all went to school together. They all hang out together. They all sit on various trade boards when they leave politics and do all business deals together, become editors of papers. Look at our former Chancellor, George Osborne, became editor of the Evening Standard after leaving politics. Well, that's if that's not politics and journalism in bed together, I don't know what it is, you know, seeking lovely from one establishment role into another, you know, all propping up the big club that we're not in. I do think Andrew Neil, former editor of the Sunday Times, you know, stalwart of British journalism, so say, legacy media, is running scared, along with the rest of the legacy media, along with the rest of the establishment. Simple as that. It might be a big club that we're not in, but you know, we're circling the doors and we're banging on the windows of this club, and they know that. They know that, and they love to go after, you know, so-called conspiracy news or conspiracy websites, conspiracy channels. That's what they would call us here at TNT, because we question the narratives. That's all you have to do to be called a conspiracy theorist. And they say we're nutters. Well, there's a lot of us about, you know, and a lot of us gathering together. So they know that. They wouldn't even bother giving us a kind of mention if they didn't know that the alternative was a threat. And he was talking about that, wasn't he, yesterday? He was saying about certain channels being, vehicles for nutters, you know, the worst end of the fringe of lunatics. Well, well, why mention it? Why mention it at all, mate, if you're not scared of it? You know, that's what I thought. Desperate times, calling for desperate measures there.
And that's the man who started GB News. What more can be said on that issue? But I just don't like the gaslighting. It's like they think we have some sort of collective amnesia and don't actually remember what's happened and how much of an establishment hack he really is. And I just had to call out Fraser Nelson for that because, obviously, you know, that's his boss and they're all in it together. The Spectator summer parties, which I've never been invited to, you may be shocked to hear, but they are quite an affair. As you say, it's cross-party. There is no, you know, you'll have a Tory drinking with his Labour opposition. And it's just ridiculous. They are all in bed together. Bring on Leveson too, many people say, which obviously was the inquiry into the media and culture and ethics and whether politicians were too close to media barons. Answer, yes. Right, Gemma, tell us, news headlines, what's going on?
Well, we've got a few new headlines. One echoes kind of what we were talking about at the top of the last hour about the amount of money that Sunak is pledging on defence spending. This morning, the former Armed Forces Minister, James Heapy, who's a former military man himself and was very respected in the job before he stepped down at the beginning of the month, he has come out this morning and said, well, he welcomes the spending on defence and he was asking for more of it while he was in post. He said it won't boost the size of Britain's armed forces, which I think is something we kind of know. The appetite for joining up, signing up, conscription effectively is not amongst the British people. So interesting comments there. Also, we're talking about, possibly the legacy journalistically of the last 4 years, if, you know, never saw a more of a time when journalists were in bed with politicians and globalists. A shocking report out today has showed the legacy of that, a generation broken by lockdown. A new big scathing report shows that children who had just started school at the time of the scamdemic are set for the worst exam results ever, GCSE exam results, which is the first exams you take in the UK, which determines really how well you're going to do. This report out today is saying a lost generation with no prospects of actual decent jobs because their social skills and their academic skills are so far behind now they can't catch up. That's academics from three major UK universities revealing the results of that today. And many people, many campaigners, including Us For Them, who I know have been on this show, saying how the government has let all children down and it's going to affect Britain's social mobility. possibility. And also today, the former leader of Northern Ireland's Democratic Union Party, Geoffrey Donaldson, he will appear in Magistrates Court in Northern Ireland, charged with rape. The 61-year-old was arrested and charged last month. He strenuously denies the charges. 57-year-old woman is also due in court, accused of aiding and abetting in connection with those offences. It will be a magistrates' hearing. There'll be very limited stuff legally that we can say on that. But of course, that is a shocking story there that nobody saw coming. Leader of one of the biggest political parties in Northern Ireland, charged with rape and other sex offences.
Horrible stuff. Which one would you like us to take a closer look at, Gemma?
Well, I think lest we forget what happened to the whole planet and the legacy that it's left. So this report out today about children, three major UK universities. It was funded by the Nuffield Foundation, which has a lot of money to look at health and well-being. Looked at children aged 5, 11 and 14, studied their progress through the education system over the last 4 years, looked at a kind of range of skills, reading and writing, and also skills that they say are really important when it comes to leaving school, even if you leave at 16 after your GCSEs and go into the world of work, which is the ability to cooperate with others, to empathize, to reason, and to debate, and to hold your own in a group environment. So all of these skills, especially in children that were very young at the start of the scamdemic, five-year-olds, they were looking at girls and boys. All of these skills have been decimated in a generation, is what the report findings are saying today. Especially boys. Boys come off worse than girls. But what they're saying is for the next generation of GCSE takers over the next few years, up to 2030, only 40% of kids are likely to achieve even anywhere near average to good results. That's 60% that will now have fallen by the wayside. It will have massive effects on people leaving school at whatever age, going into the job market, because they won't have the skills to do work properly and get good jobs, good wages, and be able to contribute to the economy, which will all lead to a decline in social mobility of the country as a whole. So that is part of this legacy. Lest we forget what happened, you know, it is still going on. The report is calling for a lot of policies to be put in, including a national program of tutors delivering academic and mentoring support. But that is really coming for criticism. You know, Arabella Skinner from Us for Them said that, you know, Boris Johnson pledged that no child would be left behind as a result of the scamdemic, but actually it's an entire generation that's been left behind, and the knock-on effects will continue to be felt in our country as the skill set of people coming out of school and into the job market, both academically and emotionally intellectually, all of those skills ruined. A lost generation, a generation broken. That's what this report is saying as a result of lockdowns and school closures.
That is horrible, absolutely horrible. And the problem is, of course, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We don't actually really know the true long-term damage of what is likely to happen. But it is absolutely horrible. The cost was just so high. They must never, ever do this again. And if that report serves as anything, it needs to be a warning to all of us of the devastating impact on our children. And I'm not always the greatest fan of formal education, but I do understand. And I do appreciate and respect the socialization involved in being in a classroom. My daughter went to primary school. And after that, I always said to her, if you want to be home educated, you can. I was fortunate because I work for myself. I work from home. So I always gave her that option throughout her entire school. But she loved primary school. And at the end of primary school, she chose then to be home educated for a period of time. So we deregistered her from school, home educated her until about 13. And she chose to go back into school on her own accord. She said, "Mum, I want to go back in. I miss the classroom environment." And it's so, people cannot even begin to understand the real sheer importance of that until you pull it away from children. But I'm concerned, Gemma. I feel that this literally is the tip of the iceberg. We're going to be hearing so much more about the devastation that has been done to that generation.
Absolutely. I mean, I reading this report now, it's just come out this morning here in the UK. It's got echoes of the CAS review that we talked about last week, which was this, you know, 4 years in the making, and came out and said there's no evidence for puberty blockers for children, gender questioning. You know, it's all based on very flimsy evidence. The same here. You know, this is a whole generation of children and not just one cohort taking their exams this year, but entire generation of kids this year, next year, the following year, affected by lockdown on no evidence. no evidence. What evidence was there to shut the schools and keep kids away from each other? And as you rightly say, and as this report has pointed out, it is the social element, the ability to cooperate with others, this report has said, the ability to reason and debate with people your age, the ability to empathize, all gone. All been lost, you know, a generation of kids that can't relate to each other. The report is also very worried, it says, because it wasn't able to look at children younger than five. And it does anecdotally, talking to teachers throughout lockdown, as we know, kids were arriving into the primary school system aged, you know, 4 or 5 years old, not potty trained, not couldn't dress themselves, you know, with very, very poor communication skills, because a lot of them were locked up at home with parents, stressed out parents who also weren't coping. So they weren't getting that attention before the age of five to develop their cognitive skills, to develop their motor skills. They're coming to school almost retarded, for want of a better word. And there is a very strong marker at the age of five, the report is saying, the social skills you've got at the age of five, the cognitive skills, your language skills, your reading skills that you have at that age, that pivotal age, are a very clear indicator of the skills you will have later in life. So this is saying, basically, you've got a lot of people completely underdeveloped in every way. Yes, we'll keep seeing the effects on this. But of course, the powers that be, the globalists, the politicians will do everything they can to say, well, it wasn't lockdown's fault. It was the parents' fault. You know, they'll try and spin it every way they can. But this report is damning. As I say, it's almost got parallels to the CAST review on gender and sexuality. This is about education and an entire skill set of generations yet to come.
Thank you, Gemma. And that's just such a sobering thought that you've delivered there for us. We will see you tomorrow. We'll be right back after the break.
Like a computer, no matter how efficient it may be, its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Now, in line with a recent study from Japan comprehensively reviewing the correlation between cancer data and mRNA injections, it would appear that our next guest has been somewhat vindicated. And here to talk more about his findings is Professor Angus Dalgleish. Good morning, Angus.
Good morning.
Really good to have you join us this morning on today's News Talk. Now, obviously, you initially supported the rollout of the vaccines. Can you tell our audience, who may not be familiar with your story, about your journey since then?
Well, my main issue really with the vaccine rollout was the fact that there was a lot of people who had cardiovascular problems when it started to be rolled out. And this was exacerbated when they started to go down to younger people. That's when I really raised the alarm, because it was not necessary. Nobody was under 70. And it's very interesting, in the UK, the head of the vaccine task force basically had pushed and approved it for people over 70. And she resigned when actually the politicians, nobody else, decided to roll it out to everybody, with the absolutely inane conclusion that if you injected all the young people, then that would protect the old people who had already been vaccinated. So that was a big alarm bell. The vaccines didn't work in the first place. That was the first thing. And then the next thing was the rollout of a booster. Now, I've done vaccine development now for over three decades. And one little aphorism, if a vaccine needs a booster, it clearly doesn't work. And the other thing is, we have had models, whereas one vaccine is a good, induces an appropriate immune response, the second might just jimmy it up if it hasn't worked that well. But a third is positively negative. It actually takes away any benefit. And a fourth actually, in one of the models, induced the disease we were trying to prevent. And there's plenty of such examples. And I'd just like to point out that I'm not doing things in retrospect, that we published with some colleagues in Frontiers of Immunology a review of Coxsackie virus, the history of Coxsackie virus failures. And there's never been a success. And worse than that, they all basically caused big problems. So that's how I got very alerted. And then more recently was that when this booster program was rolled out, which I told everybody not to take because it was very simple. We knew the virus had gone from the planet by the time they rolled the booster out. So they were inducing a virus against something that didn't exist. Now, not only was that useless, but it was taking up immune resources that would otherwise be used to fighting off other new viruses or controlling your cancer. And in a very short time, I started to realize that my cancer patients were relapsing. And the only thing I could put it down to was the booster.
This is very troubling. I mean, it's absolutely right what you say. This is not a retrospective at all. I talked to you in 2022 and you were then exposing the problems with reformulated jabs. You were already telling me there are very serious problems here. I am deeply concerned about how this impacts cancer. And as you say, it's now been like well over a year at least since you first published your very serious concerns. So what are these concerns? What are you discovering regarding the COVID boosters?
First of all, I'm discovering that patients I've looked after, and I focus on melanoma very much, who've been stable for years. So I mean like 5 years, up to the longest is 20 years. Completely okay. They go down and they relapse. And sometimes the relapses are really quite horrible and vicious, strongly suggesting that some form of control has been completely interfered with. And basically, I had six people in about a month when I noticed this, and they didn't have any of the usual things that may lead you to relapse, such a long period of depression or grief, etc. They were all quite happy, and they'd all had the boosters to go on holiday, because we had this inane requirement for you to have a booster to go on holiday. And then we found that these people, that their T-cell responses were really abnormal, highly abnormal. And it was only really when another group published that the T-cell responses in cancer patient after the booster led to, they used the lovely word, exhaustion. I mean, the T-cells are literally exhausted. They'd be like dead horse. They've been flogged to death and they literally were unable to control the cancer anymore. And then shortly after that, we had people looking at the immunoglobulin subclasses of responses to the vaccine, showing that after the booster, they completely changed. So you went from protective subclasses to the one that you normally induce in transplant patients. So it would tolerize. Instead of fighting anything, it would go, oh, that's okay, I've seen that before, I won't do anything about it. So you had two immunological hits. But it now gets a lot worse. We've now got confirmation that the spike protein can cause all sorts of problems. We know that it can cause a microclotting, which is why a lot of people have had cardiac and stroke issues, etc. But it was nicely reminded by the Japanese paper that went through and said how are the mechanisms, is that, of course, cancer and clotting, I mean, a massive association for years, and pancreatic, prostate, they're both associated with severe clotting abnormalities, which can disseminate the disease. And here you have the reminder, yes, it's not just cardiovascular, but this microclotting inflammation that the spike protein causes is an ideal environment to spread the disease. But more recently, we've had papers come out showing that, and I mean, only this week, since I agreed to do this, there's been a paper come out, which is just on a preprint, but it comes from an incredible group of scientists at Brown University. And they have confirmed what others found before, but they were all withdrawn. And people told, this is rubbish science, you must withdraw it. The journals got annoyed. And here these guys, they've completely confirmed the spike protein binds to P53, which is the king of suppressor genes. So if you have a mutation of that at birth, you're going to get cancer much sooner than anybody else. They showed that it combined BRCA, which is well known for in breast and ovary. If you have mutations in that, you're much more likely to develop breast and ovarian younger. And they found other genes too. And even worse, they found that the DNA repair mechanisms were interfered with, so that the chemotherapy and immunotherapy were less likely to be effective. And I'm afraid I saw that with one of my best friends who developed a relapse of melanoma, which you'd never have had. It was a tiny little thing. And it just literally exploded, what they call turbo cancers. And I made sure he had all the very best treatments, the very best immunotherapy, everything. Might as well not have bothered. The cancer just ripped through, killed him without it. And I knew then this was cause and effect, and we must do something about it. And here I'm really campaigning. This data is now so strong and overwhelming, it's criminal to allow vaccines to continue. It's as simple as that.
Let us stick on that point. We're going to go to some news headlines and we will be right back with Professor Angus Dalgleish. Do not go anywhere. This is Unmissable.
What do they want?
Exciting news.
Brace yourself.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Months after he was forced off air over a sordid sex photo scandal involving a teenage boy, disgraced British newsreader Hugh Edwards has officially resigned from the BBC. The UN Human Rights Chief says he's been left horrified by the discovery of mass graves outside two hospitals in Gaza. And the US Senate has approved a bill that would ban TikTok in the country if its China-based parent company ByteDance refuses to sell.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
I'm here with Professor Angus Dalgleish. He is absolutely the perfect person to be discussing the problems with the mRNA vaccine in terms of cancer. Angus is an oncologist. You've been involved in vaccine development. So you are, as I say, the perfect person for this. But you were just talking about the importance of a recall of these boosters, Angus. Tell us more.
Well, because the science is so strong, I mean, the scientific explanation as to why we are seeing these relapses, and really, it's not just the cancer, horrendous damage. I went to the hospital specialists that I work with. I asked all of them very, very straight up front. I said, have you noticed a change in your practice since the vaccines, and particularly the booster, was rolled out? I mean, I didn't have one hesitation from one specialty, whether they were hematologists, rheumatologists, cardiology is well known, and they're overwhelmed, but neurology as well. It was absolutely staggering. So I said, have you reported this? And they said, yes. And I said, what's the response? Well, we were told to shut up and be quiet, and that these things are more than outweighed by the benefit of the vaccine, which is zero. I mean, I hasten to point this out. There is no evidence that the vaccine does anything other than harm. And we know this just from the point of view that the more you get vaccinated, the more likely you are to get COVID. And a big study from the Cleveland Healthcare Group with all their staff showed that. You're 3.5 times more likely to get COVID again if you had the booster. And that goes across for everybody. Now, from my point of view, I went round and said, you must stop the vaccines. I got carpeted. So I was carpeted by the hospital directors and pointed out I was breaking NHS policy and this was unacceptable. And I said, the NHS policy is unacceptable. I said, perhaps I'm the only one doing what I swore to do, and that is first do no harm. And I said, here I'm watching the vaccines cause real harm. It's my job to stop it, and it's everybody else's. Now, a lot of my younger colleagues come up and told me that they totally agree with me, but they can't afford to speak out because they're being bullied. The NHS is an unbelievable bullying organisation. And they said, you know, like, unlike you, you know, I've got a mortgage and two kids at private school. I can't afford to speak out. What sort of organisation is this? They basically said they were going to protect whistleblowers, but then we've known that people who have blown the whistle, all they do is they get bullied and treated in a slightly different way, but it's no better. I mean, it's really awful. I understand it's very similar in Australia. I spoke to people in Australia who are also very concerned, and people who have spoken out there have been struck off. And we know one of the very first people, a GP here in the UK, said, wait, I think this is actually causing problems. And he spoke out about it, and he was reported to the GMC and suspended. I mean, it took a high court case to get him put back. He was doing his job protecting his patients. I mean, what is going on here? It is, I mean, it's truly Orwellian. And the whole political class are being captured as also a mass formation syndrome or mass psychosis, I would call it. And the other one that sprung to mind when I saw what's going on, it's just like the Stockholm syndrome. They've all been captured and saying we must do this for everybody's good without thinking. And people like me who stand up and say, look, this emperor has no clothes, we're basically told to go back into our boxes and be quiet and stop worrying people. I was told to stop saying this about all this sort of thing because it would upset the patients. I said, my job is not to upset the patients, it's to protect them. It's unbelievable. And that's what I find most scary about the whole scenario, is nobody wants to engage, nobody wants to debate. I mean, I've just written another article for the Conservative Woman today, adding on various new reports. And so that anybody says I'm just commenting on personal experience and one or two papers. No, go and look. I think we've got 26 published papers there now.
Wow. That's astonishing, isn't it? Yeah. So when you look back. Yeah. And they're still denying it. I know. Absolutely. Yes, absolute madness. But when you look back on this rollout, do you see a sinister aspect to it? Because many people do.
Of course I do. I mean, I was brought up thinking that everybody did the right thing. And that when things went wrong, I coined the Dalgleish law of universal human incompetence to explain most things that go wrong, on the grounds that incompetence is literally so common. But this is far more sinister. And I'm horrid. I mean, I was involved in with the first group to pick up the virus that had escaped from the lab. There was no ifs or buts discussion. It had six inserts in it, which gave the binding part of the virus a charge, which was way in excess of anything natural ever. And that made it so that it would be like a fridge magnet, you know, go straight onto the cell and get in and infect. And we were told to shut up. We tried to point this out. And again, it was absolutely Orwellian, because all the journals, which I'd submitted many papers and published in before, Nature and Science and Lancet, they all replied with the same reject. They said, we've got no problem with the science, but this is not in the public interest. We got rejected within 5 hours. You normally get, you know, 3 weeks before they say, we don't think it needs to go out to review. I mean, this was just unbelievable what was going on. So I do believe that this was part of something worse. And I've read in great depth everything that I can possibly get, and people send me books, which is really good. But the Robert Kennedy's books, you know, on the real Anthony Fauci, the big Wuhan cover-up, I mean, it was unbelievable. They point out things like, you know, Bill Gates published a book in 2015 on the coming pandemic, which is eerily, unbelievably so accurate. It meant he must have been involved in planning it. And we now know that the WHO was complicit in planning it. They wanted a pandemic program. They wanted to be able to roll out vaccines nice and quickly. The vaccine people say, well, you know, we can't roll out for vaccines for a disease that doesn't exist. It would cost too much money. I mean, it's all there, how they got to the situation. And they thought that they were saving the world, as it were. But there would have been no pandemic if Fauci hadn't covertly been funding the gain-of-function work that was going on in Wuhan, in a laboratory that was condemned as unsafe. And escape was obvious, even if you didn't release. I mean, you're quite right. I actually don't believe this was incompetence anymore. And that makes me really, really worried.
That is sinister, isn't it? Let me read you some comments. Of course, you can imagine they're flooding in. Mrs. Pirate says, the professor is an amazing man. It's terrifying what's happening to anyone who speaks out. It's outrageous. Now, Angus, one of the things that you commented on was turbo cancer. And we've recently seen Ofcom essentially dismiss that. There was an issue with it being mentioned on GB News. And although Ofcom didn't uphold the complaint against it, they essentially dismissed it, said there's no such thing. But you mentioned it. What are your thoughts on that?
But there's no such thing as the link between the vaccines and cancer. Is that's the question?
No, they're saying there's no such thing as a turbo cancer, but you mentioned it earlier.
Oh, sorry. Well, there's certain, that is, sorry, I didn't even know about that detail. That's so ludicrous. Turbo cancer has not been a formal diagnosis, but it was put in another way. It was edited as highly aggressive and non-responding to treatment. That's what my colleagues, they upheld it as a turbo cancer. And my colleagues doing colorectal cancer work, surgery, they have coined that too. They said they've never seen anything like it. They normally open up the abdomen for a small tumor to remove and find the whole abdomen was full. And the patient was quite well a month ago. So this is what it is. These people have no understanding about which they talk. And I regard Ofcom as the military wing of the BBC. The idea that it's there for impartiality is a total farce, because the BBC is the most partial organisation in the country. It has an absolute set stance on things like COVID, the vaccine, climate change, this, that, and it's not remotely interested in the facts that disagree with all the positions that they take. It's just awful. So, I mean, it's just that hopefully answers the question. I don't trust the word. Ofcom's not impartial. It's full of people who don't know what they're talking about. All these government agencies and quangos, etc., are all staffed by people who, in my view, having met quite a few of them, are just absolutely useless. They're there basically to fill the seats, to pretend that there was a discussion or an agreement of things. Well, that's not the way it works, because anybody who disagrees with what's already been decided now is basically blanked, cancelled, and worse, they try to remove you from your position. And no, it is really, really awful.
Thank you so much for joining us and being so honest and forthright. We absolutely need more of you in the medical profession, no doubt about it. Everybody, Professor Angus Dalgleish. Thank you so much, Angus. Wishing you a lovely Wednesday. We'll be right back.
Professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Live from London with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back. Now, paedophiles are using artificial intelligence to create nude images of children to extort more extreme material from them, according to a child abuse charity. The Internet Watch Foundation said a manual found on the dark web contained a section encouraging criminals to use nudifying tools to remove clothing from underwear shots sent by a child. The manipulated image could then be used against the child to blackmail them into sending more graphic content, the IWF said. Now, this is the first evidence the charity has seen of perpetrators encouraging each other to use AI technology for these ends. Joining me now to discuss this and so much more, and the wider implications of paedophiles weaponizing AI, is independent journalist Joachim Hagopian. Good morning, Joachim. How are you?
I'm doing good. Great to be here, Sonia.
Really great. I think some of your research is absolutely phenomenal. I've seen your series. I've read your stuff. I think you and I are going to have a meeting of minds right now. So please, first of all, explain to us a little more about how paedophiles are weaponizing AI.
Well, they got the technology now, and a lot of these paedophiles have very technical skills by which they use software for the various purposes you outlined. Stripping photos of kids in underwear and then making them nude and then exchanging them and exchange of money. I mean, the internet is an attraction zone for children, and with the social media out there and parents too busy at work not watching what their kids are doing on social media, they are fair game for these sickos that are preying on them. And they're using all the kinds of technologies in their favor. I hope that the parliament is able to come up with a law. It's mentioned in the Guardian article that they actually are considering a law to ban that software so it cannot be used, obviously, for the illicit, illegal, horrible purposes.
Now, you, as much as I, we've both researched global paedophile elite rings. We know the problem. We know how much infiltration there is around the world. But how do you begin to battle something like this on the dark web?
Well, I think that there's regulations that you can control what content ends up on the dark web. I don't know if they're actually making a whole lot of effort, because the reality is pretty much all the governments, and especially in the West, are part of this whole pedophilia operation operating on this planet. So, and when you have, as you are very aware, because you've exposed so many, when there are parliament members and Congress members who are pedophiles or go to parties, they drink something, they pass out because they got drugs in, they have the camera going, and the next thing they know, they're being sexually blackmailed. And I just wrote an article about this with Tucker Carlson finally coming out and saying this. You know, what you and I have been saying for what? 10, 15 years.
Seems like forever. But it is important, isn't it, that Tucker Carlson, huge media personality, so that is significant. And obviously what he has said in an interview with Joe Rogan is, as you say, exactly what you and I have been saying for well over a decade. And for example, that intelligence services are behind the blackmailing of politicians. Children are used for these purposes. This is all to do with the involvement of the deep state. The fact that we've had a Jimmy Savile and a Jeffrey Epstein who links up the establishment and politicians and royalties. But what are your thoughts? How significant is it that an influential media personality like Carlson has come out and said this?
It's big, you know, because obviously you can have a lot of people like you and me that have been talking about this for a long time, and we are not alone, obviously. There's a lot of others that have been coming forth, a lot of victims coming forth. But, you know, I mean, Tucker Carlson, is he maybe the biggest personality certainly on the internet, which outdoes all the networks? So, you know, he might be the biggest in the world. So, but what kind of is, it's not really funny, but it was like, he's acting all shocked. Like, this is all new to him, you know?
Right,
he has a congressman in his kitchen, and he's like downloading all his anger out with the congressman. And the congressman goes, yeah, I know. They do that. They install all kinds of stuff on the internet. We're just victims. I mean, but the fact that he has been around the block of many years, you know, he's lived in Washington forever. And, you know, he was kind of groomed in that whole culture where it's very common, you know. So, I mean, so, for him to act like he's shocked and surprised and all that, what a joke. But anyway, yes, it's very big that he gets to say it and a lot of people listen. Maybe they'll listen to us more now.
Yeah, well, I don't think either of us have done too badly with it. I think bit by bit. See, I believe in the kind of idea of each one teach one, no matter what the size of your platform. So if you're able to convey your message to at least one other person, that should be enough because everybody can spread that information. And so I'm interested in finding out what sort of patterns you've observed in terms of, you know, the blackmail of these child abuse images, for example, in terms of the CIA. CIA, MI6, Mossad, those sort of organizations. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my original thought is they are the private army of the deep state oligarchs, which are the dynasty bloodlines that have been in control, the banking infrastructure, central banking, Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the royal families of Europe, black nobility. They're all behind it. They're the controllers of it. And the private army is their intelligence services around the world. They are the gophers that are the coordinators to all of these pedophilia rings. And I devoted 2 out of the 5 books I wrote on this topic to UK, where MI6 and, you know, CIA, Mossad, they all are involved in every single one of these scandals. So we know that they're at the behest of the controllers of this planet because they have the money and the power to control everybody. And unfortunately, yes, they use children as their commodity for control. That's why we have wars all the time. That's why we have this pandemic that comes in with a kill shot, killing millions of people. They want us dead, and they're using children as their commodity to do it.
I mean, I know all that you've just said is absolutely true, but there'll be some people listening saying that can't possibly be right. And this is the thing, is that decent people, this is a message to decent people out there, we don't expect you to understand the mind of these people. These people are not like us. They are deeply sick. So it is very difficult to imagine abusing children like that if you're not of that mind state. And you were one of the earliest writers to talk about the Pizzagate allegations, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. No one would touch it because it was so controversial. And of course, you have all the major media. Oh, that's just a conspiracy theory, you know. I mean, we've always been, you know, dismissed that way, you know. But the bottom line is, yeah, it's real. And more of us are believing it out there now because there's so much evidence of exposure.
You also wrote about how Epstein had gotten away with that sweetheart deal. That was horrendous, wasn't it? I mean, just how could that have happened?
Well, when you get MI6 and Mossad behind you, you're in the pay grade that's higher than, you know, the prosecutor. And that was the case, you know. The prosecutor was told, back off, higher pay grade, he's intelligence, leave him alone. So they gave him the sweetheart deal, you know. I mean, it's just incredible how they've been able to get away with. I mean, not one member of Parliament or Congress has ever gone to prison for pedophilia, and they're all involved. Well, I won't say all, but maybe 50 to 60% are involved in it.
Plenty are. We know that. I mean, for example, Margaret Thatcher, former prime minister, she was surrounded by paedophiles, one knighted, you know. So we know there are plenty, absolutely. But the Epstein story, we've yet to really get to the bottom of that. I mean, I don't believe for a second we've been told the truth. Do you?
No. And the Ghislaine Maxwell, that was a whitewash. Yeah, they had to put her away for a few years. But hey, all those videos that they take all those years of all those big celebrities and politicians, they're all around. So there's a whole bunch of copies of them. We're waiting for them to go public and start indicting these pedophiles that we all nobody, because they're so famous, you know? I mean, there's so many, yet no one goes to jail. No one's indicted. Everything is left alone. It's just pathetic.
It is pathetic, because I don't claim to be a fan of Ghislaine Maxwell, but it seems really odd to me that the only person in prison for this scandal is a woman, and none of the clients have been tracked down. And obviously we know the Epstein flight list is extensive, and not suggesting for one second that just because you were in Epstein's book or on the flight that you're automatically a paedophile, but there's plenty of people who should have been questioned, right?
Of course. And what all this is a testimony that they're still protected. The establishment's not going after them. They're shielded. No one has ever prosecuted that has any kind of level of power. No one.
I mean, I just find it extraordinary. But here's the thing, right? And I don't even know if there's an answer to this, but do you think that certain people gravitate towards these positions because they are already part of that? Or do you think that they find themselves enmeshed in it once they are in those positions?
I think it's a combination of both. There are, you know, supposedly psychologists say that 5% of the population has leanings towards pedophilia. But we live in a psychopathic system by which it attracts psychopaths to then become gatekeepers. And the gatekeepers may have inclinations to go that way, or they may have inclinations to want power. And the way to get to power is to be a gatekeeper to protect pedophiles that are at high levels. And so the system goes on. And, you know, it's up to the people. The people are going to have to rise up and finally demand accountability.
Absolutely. Tell me where you're up to with your research, because I'm sure we're due to see a new piece from you soon.
Well, I put out articles. I have a Revolution Radio broadcast 2 hours a week, and it keeps me very busy with all the latest current events. And, you know, we're headed for war. That's the way it is. You know, I'm a West Point graduate, ex-military guy. So I focus a lot on the geopolitics and exposing all the wheeling and dealing and provocation that the West is just prodding for a war, a major global World War III. So that keeps me busy with the broadcast and the articles. I will probably at some point take time off and take up another topic to write a book about, because I do want to do that.
The problem is, of course, about this topic, and I don't need to tell you that, is this whole thing, isn't it? You stare long into the abyss and then it starts to stare back at you. It's a very dark topic. I have to walk away from it on a regular basis and then come back at it afresh. I have no plans ever to give up my paedophile investigations, but it does take it out of you, doesn't it?
Oh, 4 years and 3 months, every day waking up to it. Oh, my God. It's really a horror. But I knew I had to do it, you know. The information has to get out there. And when I started in April 2017, 7 years ago, it was a taboo topic at that point. Yes, there was Epstein a little bit here and there. He wasn't arrested for the second time yet. That's what really opened the floodgate of it being on everybody's mind when he got arrested again in 2019. But anyway, yeah, it was a taboo topic when I first started. But by the time I finished, more and more people were curious about it and knew that all this stuff, to some extent, goes on. So they were trying to find out more information. And I'm glad that people like you and me are around to deliver that information for them.
Absolutely. Listen, from one researcher to another, keep up the excellent work. Children really need us now more than ever because we can see it. You're absolutely right. They are used as all manner of collateral damage for wars and blackmails by the powers that be. Everybody, this is Joachim Hagopian. He is, if you didn't already know, an excellent independent journalist. Thank you so much, Joachim, for joining us today on the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk. And that about brings us to the end of our show this Wednesday. What a journey this has been. I want to thank all of my incredible guests, all of the incredible team that has brought these stories and me to you here every morning. Coming up next, David Curtin will be joined by our very own Lembit Opik and the rather marvellous Stephanie Davis Arai. She's fabulous, interviewed her a ton of times. She's from Transgender Trend. And as I say, stick around. We have a whole raft of brilliant shows coming up on today's News Talk on this Wednesday. And thank you all in the comments for all of your contributions this morning. Thank you, Catherine. As per usual, great show, great chat, and a pleasure to be part of it. Thanks, everyone. We are indeed a community. Thank you, Brett. So grateful to people like yourselves that put it out there. And, you know, absolutely, Joachim is amazing. Thank you all. Have a terrific Wednesday. I will see you tomorrow. Do not go anywhere. Take care of yourself.